From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show, and on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. Today's show is going to be great. We have Robert Morin and Arik Levy. We're going to talk about the Entrepreneurs Organization. We're going to talk about working your way up in a business and actually turning your hard work into entrepreneurship. Stick around. It's going to be a great show. But I also, at the end of the show, I'm going to talk a little bit about a big event that we have coming up on August 25th. It is called GFX. And it's going to be off the charts for entrepreneurs, venture capitalists, and the like. So stick around. I'll talk about that just briefly at the end of the show.
Entrepreneurs are the heroes of the American economy. They take the risks, create the opportunities, and move the molecules. Now, back to the Marquee Media Studio, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Today, you are going to hear a story that will be guaranteed to motivate you. This is a story about a man that seizes opportunity in a place where, you know, maybe you think it's just an ordinary job, maybe to some people, but to other people, they see it as this wonderful opportunity. Today, I have Arik Levy. He is the founder of Luxor One, and he has brought with him Robbie Morin. He is the owner of Lux Powder Coating, and it's a story about you, Robbie, so why don't we... Arik is this guy that's built this incredible company, Luxor One, and you know he's had this amazing exit. He's now started a venture capital fund, and he's doing all these crazy things. But at some point, he met you. What happened?
Yeah, absolutely. I met Arik. I think I was 19 at the time. I was working a government job, and then I was working government, then I went into nonprofit. And no one told me, but there was no profit in it. And I was just kind of miserable. It wasn't exactly something I was enjoying. And then I was complaining to my best friend at the time, Shane, and he was telling me about a guy who was about to start a company here in Sacramento. I'm like, oh man, like, I don't know what that's about or what that's like, but I'd love to like talk to him. So I'm like, give me that guy's phone number. So he gets me his cell phone number. I text him. That's Arik. And I say, like, hey, like, I think we met once or twice. I'm not sure how well you know me, but I heard you're about to start a company. I'd really like to come talk to you. And I think the rest is kind of history.
Wow. So he hadn't even started it yet. And so you were one of the early employees on this startup venture.
Yeah. I mean, Arik had started, he had the idea and he was already had a few clients and was started. I was the first person that he hired in Sacramento.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So, Arik, maybe tell us just a bit about your business and then what you saw in Robbie that that caused you to help him see some opportunity within your company.
Yeah, so Luxor One is a electronic parcel delivery company. We put lockers into apartment buildings, office buildings, retailers. And at that time, it's kind of a spinoff of a company I had in San Francisco called Laundry Locker. And my wife and I moved to Sacramento. I knew if I was going to grow and scale this company, I couldn't really do it in San Francisco. I needed a market where I could do manufacturing, hire customer service, really scale and grow a company. And so, we just moved to Sacramento, kind of getting things started here. I had one other employee who I brought over from Laundry Locker who was kind of spinning off and helped me install lockers. And I got hit up out of the blue. This guy said, want to talk to you about what you're doing. And for me, this right-hand man, the Swiss Army knife, as you call it, is that critical role when you're starting a company. And that's what I'm looking for, is just people who can do everything, who are willing to roll up their sleeves, work hard, hungry, humble, and smart. And so, when I met Robbie, I kind of saw those qualities right there and knew that this guy was willing to do it all. He's like, hey, teach me about startups. I want to figure this out. I want to see what I can do. And he had a very clear path of where he was going with his life. I think he wanted to be a politician. And I said, well, come over and see the startup world.
Politician, Robbie. Come on, man.
I know. It was a big mistake, but you got to try some things,
So it was love at first sight. I knew this guy was going to kill it. And, you know, Luxor One would not be what it was if it wasn't for him and some of those early key employees who are just willing to do anything it takes to make your company successful.
It's interesting because startups, they're fun in many ways, but there's a lot of challenges at the beginning. You got to be sort of flexible, like a Swiss Army knife tends to be. You might get stuck cleaning the floors one day, and then the next day you're doing something like, making phone calls to customers and you're not used to it. So what was the craziest thing you had to do at the beginning? And then when did you really, was there a turning point where it's like, oh, wow, I'm now like his right-hand guy?
Yeah, I don't know that there was it's hard to say that there's one point, right? Like, I know when I started, you know, we basically didn't know each other at all. And I think originally you started, you're like, hey, you can come do customer service, talk to clients, or build the, I built the electronics that actually went into the lockers at the time, go do installs. He offered me a list of here's four jobs, pick one. And then he's like, or you could come kind of be my assistant. And I'm like, well, that sounds like that would give me, it gave me a lot of variety where I didn't want to sit on the phones all day and do just one thing. Mm-hmm. So I took that weird one and was mm-hmm. The one that wasn't defined. And it kind of turned into whatever needed to be done that day, especially in the startup world, right? Because there's problems coming at you all the time.
Did you have to work a lot of hours? Did you work a lot? How did that work out?
We kept a pretty good balance. I mean, I was doing, I'd say maybe 8 to 10 hours a day, 5 days a week.
Okay, not too bad.
No, we weren't killing ourselves.
You got to burn the candle at both ends. You were probably working a lot at that point.
Yeah, I mean, this was sort of my third endeavor. So at mm-hmm. that point in time, I realized I needed a little bit of balance in my mm-hmm. life after doing this for, 12, 13 years at the time. And so, but we worked hard, whether we worked a ton. I mean, we worked a decent number of hours, but every one of those hours was action packed. I mean, it was like, hey, get on a plane, Robbie, and go fix this locker over there, or go do this install, or pack some boxes, or take this customer service call, or go meet with this, or figure this problem out. So a lot of fun, and definitely, a lot of hard work. We put in hours, but nothing. It wasn't the insane early days that you might see at a startup.
It was cool to be able to do. I got my hands in a little bit of everything, because there's what needs to be done, right? There's getting the lockers to work, and then there was stuff when I started, I was working out of RX House. And then pretty soon we're like, this isn't happening. We need to get an office.
So you got to get along with this wife.
Yeah. Family. Yeah. Yeah. You just had a kid too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The baby was screaming. And then we're like, okay, we need to go get an office. So then we have to go figure out, for me, that would never even cross my mind of how do you go get office space? Something like that. So it's going out, looking at office spaces, trying to find a warehouse that will suit what we need. Kind of
you had to do that?
Yeah, I mean, he had me go meet with the commercial rep, the commercial
real estate guy. Robbie, go figure this out. You know the city better than I do. Yeah. Where should we have our office?
Yeah, so it's like one day, it's like, oh, hey.
How old were you at the time? Because you still look like a young guy. I mean, you still, yeah. How old are you now?
I'm 27 now.
You're 27, so you're 19 at the time.
I'm 19 at the time.
And you've been working for a nonprofit, a little bit in the government. You're barely out of high school.
Yeah.
And now it's like I'm going out talking to commercial realtors.
Yeah, that's weird, because especially in those early days, every time I showed up, the guy's like, wait, what? You're the guy?
Your dad?
Yeah. So that was definitely a weird one. But it was cool because, some days, you build electronics and then I run it to the post office. And then some days, I'm trying to figure out how we're going to lease, whatever, 5,000 square feet of office.
Oh, that's crazy. Well, the company obviously grew very rapidly. As I mentioned earlier, you had a really cool exit. Tell me about maybe that as it scaled, when did you know you were going to go off on your own and start your own business?
It didn't cross my mind. I was drinking the Kool-Aid pretty heavy. I was really, and still am really fired up about what Luxor One is and is doing or was doing. And, I kind of envisioned riding that out as far as I could. And then, Luxor One, thankfully, we found ARC found a way to get it to an exit, and that was fantastic. And I started kind of thinking about how, where my path was going and how much I was starting to enjoy it. One of the interesting things about a company going from, me and ARC and I out of his house to 200 people, something like that, is kind of every day that it was successful, it got a little further away from something I was enjoying because it got bigger. It was more people. And I really enjoy, or what I found is I really like building things and I don't love managing. You know, once you have, at one point I was in charge of like the customer service department for the company, had like 85 people working for me. Your job is HR and then like some more HR.
And, so you got 85 people working underneath you and you're in your early
20s. I'm like 21.
Yeah.
Something like that.
What great experience though.
It was crazy. Yeah. Yeah. But like, it becomes like, you know, you're kind of, your job is to do slow things, like move in the right direction slowly, deal with a lot of HR stuff. And once you've kind of had, like, it's almost like a drug. When you have had, like, the early startup phase where, like, what you do that day dramatically changes the outcome of the company, right? Like, I was in the early days when there's 5 of us, 10 of us, 15, 20 of us. The things I was doing, you know, could in theory, hopefully not, but sink or swim the company. And that becomes a drug. I became addicted to that. I really enjoyed the impact, right? And so as Luxor One grew, you know, of course I still had an impact and contributed, but it you know, got watered down a little bit.
Did you feel the same way? Is that, to me, is that like a drug for you too? Or were you sweating the, you know, the ups and downs of the company?
Oh, like, yeah. I mean, the bigger it gets, the more you sweat, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So in those early days, while you're working hard, there's a lot less at risk, from when it gets bigger. I mean, I too have found that I really enjoy the early stages of a company, building something, getting that product market fit, and then seeing it succeed. You know, the mid-size of that business where you're going from, you know, 10 million to 100 million is fun, but it's very different challenges. I'm kind of trying to learn that part of the business. I think, you know, that's more of the traditional MBA, put in place core values, you know, Traction, EOS, whatever it is, you want to use different tools to build that business. And we had some great success and it was a lot of fun in that. But there's nothing more fun than just picking up your bag and going out and fixing something or making a phone call or doing whatever it is that needs to be done.
And Luxor One got bought by Assa Abloy, a multi-billion dollar international company. And so that, how did that change? Did you stay with it all the way to the exit, Robbie?
Yeah. I mean, it got, what, it sold 3 years in, 4 years in, and then there was an earnout for 3 years after that, and so I stayed through till earnout. I left the month after the earnout ended.
That was convenient.
Okay, and now each of you, you started something new, Arik. We'll talk about that. But what did you start? You decided to start something. What is this, Robbie?
Yeah, so I started a small powder coating operation here in Sacramento. Small right now. We'll see where it goes. But yeah, so like earnout ends and, I had a great opportunity. I got to come learn with Arik. You know, I am very thankful for the experience. You know, I made some money, stuff like that. But what I really got, like you were saying, I was 19 to 25. I got a world-class education in business building. And, so as I was thinking about like earnout ending, what do I want to do? Do I want to stay? Do I want to go look at another job? Do I want to do some other path? And I was like, what I really want to do is, like, what anyone else, put that education to use, you know? Yeah. And so I started looking around at, I think one of the hard things for me was like, what is the idea? What's the business, right? And I didn't have like this cool technology company, I didn't have any great ideas, but I was like, I learned a lot about how to build a good, sustainable, scalable company and sprinkle a little tech in there. So I started looking at like blue collar lines of work. And then one of my best friends, Derek, was going to school for metalworking, like welding. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to do something with him. And I learned a lot about powder coating. The lockers are powder coated. So I learned a lot about it. And I was like, you know what? Why don't I just take a look at this? And I took a look at the Sacramento market specifically. And competition was interesting. It seemed a little weak. Seemed like there was some room for improvement. And, you know, the startup cost was within something I could afford. So just like all the Venn diagram kind of made sense. And so I was like, yeah, screw it. Let's go take a crack at it.
So powder coating, that's basically painting. You knew about painting lockers. I know it's more than painting, yeah. But powder coating metal on metal. Who's your core customer today?
Yeah. So like the simplest, the vaguest, but simplest explanation is any company making a product out of metal. What that looks like in reality is it ends up being, you know, a lot of architectural like gates, fencing, rails, posts, pipe, whatever you could, you know, make out of metal lockers, right? But a lot of these companies are making like a product repeated over and over again, and then the final step they have to paint it.
And in that business, what's your role? You're the founder of the company, but do you get your hands dirty, or are you, overseeing things?
Yeah, I mean, I did. So I'm a year in this month, is 1 year for us. So that's exciting. When I started with Derek and another gentleman, Cody, and the three of us were doing it all. So definitely hands-on, hanging up the metal, you know, working with the stuff, painting it. So I was in the booth day in and day out. Not so much anymore. We're up to, I have 14 people on staff now. And
wow.
Yeah, yeah. And so we have like two shifts of guys that are running all day. And so I don't get in the booth much anymore.
That's cool. So now when starting the company, I think Arc had a hand in this. And this is, to me, is it's interesting to me to think when you go all in on a job, right? As an employee, you get recognized and you get promoted and, you know, you play your cards right, and other people jump in and the company's successful. It creates all kinds of opportunity for you. And I know others in the company as well. But you get that entrepreneurial bug but you want to do something with that. And Arik, if I'm not mistaken, saw that entrepreneurial spirit in you and wanted to help.
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah, I think you might need to ask him about that more than me.
Okay, what did you see, Arik, and what did you do?
Well, I want to back up a little bit on Robbie's story around the powder coating.
Okay.
Because he didn't tell you the whole story. So our lockers are powder coated, and we were looking to reduce costs on our manufacturing side. And so, and a lot of times we had to touch them up and things like that or fix them. We had tons of them sitting in stores that need to be refurbished. And so there was an opportunity to buy a powder coating shop in Sacramento right down the street from our office. And so it was a relatively small investment. Osaboy came in, they were pushing us hard on how do we do cost reductions. So I said, well, let's buy a powder coating shop and start dabbling into manufacturing side of things, because prior to that, we'd outsource everything. Well, Robbie's my guy. I mean, when it was like our customer service team was in shambles, I was like, Robbie, go fix customer service. Project management need help, Robbie, go fix that. Hey, we just bought a new powder coating shop. Nobody knows what we're doing. Can you go run that thing? So he went in and ran the powder coating shop for a little bit and, you know, learned powder coating, figured it out. Well, the guy we bought it from had business coming in through the door. And Robbie's like, hey, there's all this business happening on this powder coating side. We just took a major powder coater out of the market and privatized it. And I think that's where he really got to, A, learn the trade and see the opportunity in there.
Okay.
Right? And so then he came to me and said, Arik, I want to start a powder coating shop. I'm like, well, you got to be kidding me. Like, this guy's going to take over our powder coating operation. Or he's going to go leave now that I, you know, got him set up in powder coating. But I was super excited. I couldn't be more excited. For me, like, the best thing, you know, when one of your key employees, like, I'm going to leave to another company, you're like, oh man, that stinks. What did I do? You know, I kind of like, how did I not retain this perfect talent here? But when someone goes and says, hey, I'm going to go start my own business, I mean, there's nothing more rewarding, exciting for me as an entrepreneur, seeing that someone, you know, saw the excitement, the passion there, was really bought into what we were doing and wanted to go build a life for themselves. And so when he said what he was doing, I'm like, I'm in, how do I help you, man? Is there some way that I can get involved in this from a financial perspective, from a mentorship perspective? And he and I have kept a fantastic relationship through that. I'm heavily involved with him. You know, we've started the EO Accelerator program here in Sacramento, and Robbie's been a great figure in there, and he's provided a lot of that guidance and the lessons that we learned over the years to all the other folks that are out there. So, you know, I mean, if you do want to go start, so many people want to go start their own company, I think that's great. I think what Robbie did, where he came in when he was 19, 20, 21, 25, whatever it is, and just mentor a successful entrepreneur for 5 years, right? Sit there and be their right hand man. And hey, you need this done? No problem. You need me to go pick up lunch? No problem. You need me to fly out to Atlanta and install some lockers? Whatever you need done, the more I can learn, the better. And I think, you know, that's what it was for Robbie. Once you scale, it's hard to learn those things as quick. Whereas when you're small, it's just like every day is a great learning opportunity and builds that skill set that you need to be able to do finance, do customer service, do operations, do real estate, do, you know, manufacturing, all the different pieces you need to be a successful entrepreneur. Robbie kind of learned all that super fast.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's great advice somebody listening might think, you know, that sounds cool, but I mean, a lot of us, like Robbie, you didn't have the dream at that point of what you wanted to do. So you go around and be around somebody that's got a dream and help them with their dream. And the next thing you know, opportunity ends up coming out of that. I want to talk about the EO Accelerator. And for those of you that don't know what an accelerator is, Arik, maybe you can explain how the EO Accelerator, maybe step back a second. What is EO? For those of you that you don't know, I carry around my EO hat if you're watching on YouTube, because I was the president of EO for a couple of years. Now Arik's the president for the last couple of years. Maybe talk about what EO is and then what's the accelerator within EO.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, EO, Entrepreneurs Organization, it's the largest entrepreneurs group in the world. Mark, you and I are both members of it, and that's how we met. Amazing network of folks here in Sacramento. I think there's about 75 of us right now who all are running businesses over $1 million, companies we founded and started. And so we've all got that same DNA. We wanted to be able to give back to the organization or to the community and really foster entrepreneurship. And the accelerator program, there's other accelerator programs out there. Most of them are focused on the funding side of things, the VC side, the software companies, et cetera. I mean, that's not really what EO is. I mean, yeah, we have a couple of those companies out there, but we've got the folks who are building closets and fixing screens and doing all kinds of different businesses. You do not need to be in the tech world. I mean, I have a locker company. And so our accelerator, while we have some of those, we also have other companies. It's designed for companies that are between 250,000 and a million. So they're getting a little bit of traction, they're getting started. And it's really just this incredible training. So, you know, quarterly we have a world-class trainer comes in and it's based on scaling up an EOS and teaches them the fundamentals of how to run business. And then there's an accountability group where we meet with everybody on a monthly basis and a small group of like five people paired with one EO member, really coaching them on their business, holding them accountable, and really helping them try to grow. I mean, I wish when I started my company, I didn't find EO till I was about 3 million. And then, you know, I was struggling a lot. I had never had a network of people who knew what I was going through and had those same experiences. And so by it being bringing that down to people in those early stages when you're really, really struggling and don't know what to do, it's been a really powerful thing. And I'm heavily involved in it, really enjoy, you know, seeing these companies grow, helping them solve their problems, and, you know, giving back to the community.
You bet. And for those of you that I'm going to elaborate on what EO is and has been, EO in Sacramento has got some of the most successful entrepreneurs in the region in EO, in our forum. It's got people who have, you know, built and sold companies. We got Uriah Faber, who is a, you know, professional fighter, but owns, I don't know, 10 companies plus, super entrepreneur. Really have an incredible mix. And it's kind of like a brotherhood and sisterhood because there's women involved as well. But there's like a closeness, almost like a family, if you will, of entrepreneurs that are friends with one another. And when you get into these smaller groups called forums, there's a real strong connection among a lot of us. And so it really is cool. So starting the accelerator for EO, you know, where the revenues are maybe a little bit smaller, but the idea is help you to grow. And then maybe you join EO as a regular member and, you know, have tremendous success in getting one of our regular forms. So with that said, with teed up, Robbie, tell me about your experience in the EO Accelerator and maybe kind of walk us through what that is because it is brand new.
Yeah. I think this is the first year that EO's done it, right? Like I'm in the first...
In Sacramento, yeah.
The first class. Oh, yeah, in Sacramento. So yeah, it's what Arik described. I think that for me, it's been really helpful. The structured learning does a lot for me. I appreciate the group forums and getting to talk with other business owners, but what I really like is like the structure. It's like, I wouldn't call it a classroom setting, but like bringing in someone with like guided lessons of like, hey, here's what you need to do. Here's what you need to be thinking about as far as like strategy goes, or hey, here's how, you know, you should be thinking, or some ideas on how you should be thinking about cash for your business, or hey, here's like some good cadence on execution, what your business should be doing. And I think it provides like a really strong framework to help a company go from like that really early stage to something a little more established.
Do you have a vision of getting it, growing it to the point where you actually join the regular EO group?
Yeah, certainly. I like you guys were saying, I think Accelerator is for anyone where the top line's over 250, and then regular EO is for anything over a mil. So I think, for, you know, if for nothing else, just for the sake of the goal, like that's definitely what we're pushing towards.
How's it tracking?
We're good. I think, I hope we'll close out this year, like high eights, maybe low nine,
nice,
something like that. Yeah, we did. We only did 350 for last year. So we're definitely growing.
Wow,
and doing
that's
well
tremendous
this year.
Growth. I knew you had the growth in the employees, but the revenue is going right along with it.
Yeah, you've never seen a powder coating shop grow like he's growing. It's pretty cool. I mean, and his aspirations where he wants to take this thing. It's super fun. I mean, that's why I love Laundry Locker. We were dry cleaner. You know, I think Robbie was inspired around that a little bit. He was talking about being an electrician or a powder coating shop. And some of those, you know, there is so much opportunity in some of those blue collar type businesses to really come in and transform an industry and scale it fast and build in some really cool things and some technology. And, so I'm excited. I mean, when he said he was doing power coding, I loved it because it's to me, it's just like laundry or dry cleaning, right? And I was like, hey, how do we change this business? How do we scale this? How do we, you know, fix the problems? Because there's so many problems in those types of industries from a customer service operations perspective.
Yeah, believe it or not a ton of innovation happening in the powder coating space, right? So I think it provides a great opportunity for someone to come in and say like, hey, how could we be doing this even just a little bit better, right? You do something 10% better, you can grab a slice of the market that, you know, you end up with a pretty decent business. And I think that as it turns out, starting a business is hard. Who knew? Arik should have told me.
I've never heard that before.
I know, right? It's crazy. Someone should have mentioned it to me. And so I like the idea of doing something simpler, right? Like I didn't need to, you know, go out and get like crazy venture funding or hire a bunch of software developers or something. It's just me and a couple guys getting in a shop and figuring out like, how could we do this a little bit better?
Well, what's the bigger vision as it scales? What do you envision your company to become?
Yeah, so like our BHAG is like we're trying to just do one shop a year, which like, funny enough, when I told the guys, hey, we're going to do like one shop a year, they're like, you're sandbagging. They're like, you know, once we get three, we could do, you know, two the next year, three the next year, something like that.
I don't understand what one shop a year means.
I want to build one new shop every year.
Why do you want to do new shops? Are these in different geographic locations?
Yeah. So I think there's no big powder in like America. There's a bunch of, I'd say, like small, medium businesses or companies that kind of bring it in, like Luxor, bring it in-house and do it on their own. As far as like the industry I'm in, the actual people doing powder coating for other companies, they don't get too much bigger than like, I don't know, maybe 2, 3, 4 mil, something like that. You know, what the guys or what the companies have done that I've like looked into in the powder space, they build one really good shop. And then for one reason or another, maybe scaling becomes hard, or, you know, maybe they just don't have the aspiration to do it. But most people stop there, which is great. They have good businesses. But it wasn't quite enough for me. I want to see kind of how far we can take this thing. And so the business plan, the strategy here is build like a medium-sized shop. So I'm not the shop I have here is not the largest thing in Sacramento, but it's a nice medium size that we could kind of play with and prototype and see, one, hey, can we get one shop to work? And, you know, then the next question becomes, if you can get one to work, can you get two?
Mm-hmm.
And then, so that's what we're going to try to do this year is build a second one. And if we can get that second one to work, then I've proven that I can duplicate it. And then can I put in enough process and enough scalability into it to where I can start maybe, you know, rubber stamping these things in other cities. And then you kind of can get some explosive growth.
Do you envision a franchise model, or where you put a manager in place in a different geographic location and he or she takes a piece of equity?
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly right now we're so early. So my only focus is like one, because you got to remember we are small. So sometimes, you know, I just think like, hey, let's make payroll today. But when I do take a step back and think about like a bigger vision, I think, yeah, want to get to the second one, prove it can be duplicated. If I can prove that it can be duplicated, now you have a lot of options, right? You could certainly franchise it. I could start trying, you know, I could take on capital and try to do five more myself or something like that. There's a couple paths you can go once you prove it's scalable.
Yeah, interesting. There's such a shortage right now of people in the trades. So, you know, I have, you know, friends that are, you know, I have a concrete company. So I see that happening. We deal with fencing and getting stuff powder coated occasionally. And it's, yeah, it's, there's delays and that kind of thing. So are you having challenges in terms of, you know, you got 14 employees, but are they hard to get, hard to retain?
It's interesting. I think that originally, just because it's just where my head went, when we started hiring, I thought, well, I'm competing against other powder coaters, right? So like, I'll just go look at what they're paying and, you know, I'm sure I can see what the business can afford and see how well I can recruit from them. But because we're, you know, we're in that, you know, that hourly range, I'm not actually normally competing with like powder coaters. Most people that are looking for jobs with like a company like mine to be in the shop, they're not like, I've always wanted to be a powder coater, right? They're like, no, I need like a good paying job, you know, that will get them by. And so I'm actually competing against like anyone paying in that hourly range, right? So whether that's like Amazon down the street, Chick-fil-A, other powder coaters. So we're competing in like a much bigger ecosystem than like I guess I naively originally thought when I started looking at it. To answer your question, we kind of struggle with it. I'd say that we have a lot of churn in a good way, meaning people that come in and like it and they stay, and people that come in and don't like it and they leave relatively quickly. It's definitely a different environment, I think, than people necessarily expect when they first show up. Because you go in applying to a powder coater, one, you meet me when you walk in the door and they're like, well, that's not what I thought I was getting, you know, out of this like blue collar hourly labor job. And then
why are you different than they expect?
I'd say like one, I'm a little bit younger than your average, you know, powder coat business owner these days.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we bring a different energy to it. Like Cody and Derek, the two guys that are kind of like the rocks for me. Like they're my friends, they're the same age as me. And so we kind of, there's a certain energy, I think, in the business and in the shop that you feel when you get to come in there that people don't necessarily expect when they just see a job posting. And then we run, EOS and run level 10s.
And let's explain what that is. It's been referenced a couple of times. EOS to you is what?
Well, it's the Entrepreneur's Operating System. And to it, I guess it's a structure for running a business, I guess is like the broadest way I can explain it. It gives you, I guess, a formula or a reference point for how some things might be better done. The easiest example, I think, is like a meeting, just like a standard weekly meeting. I think everyone can attest to, God, like weekly meetings are the worst. No one wants to sit into a business meeting and listen to someone talk about whatever facts or figures on there. And EOS and level 10, the name for that meeting, gives you a different structure that really helps push your business forward. That like I would have never come up with on my own.
Yeah. Or if level 10 meeting means it's like a 10 out of 10 in terms of quality versus if you have a level 5 meeting, that means it wasn't that
good. Yeah, it's a pretty bad meeting. Yeah.
What happened? Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
But like it gives you a prescription for how, you know, you could maybe operate your business, and it just clears up some things that like I don't want to spend my time figuring out how best to run a meeting. I got other things I need to be focusing on. Mm-hmm. And so I think just having any sort of system to run your business is very helpful. And we ran EOS at Luxor. did very well. So why change the formula, right?
Love it.
Keep it running. Yeah.
That's great. All right. Let me let you jump in here. What are you, you're now, you started a venture capital firm. What you want to talk about that at all?
I'll quickly jump into it. So, you know, I've been in the locker industry almost 20 years now. Laundry Locker is pretty well known in the space as one of the first locker-based businesses. Luxor One had a lot of success. And once I sold the company, I started doing some investing. So, you know, got involved with Robbie and a whole bunch of other companies and realized that, you know, like while I can coach them and give them some business advice, I don't know the first thing about powder coating or, you know, other types of software businesses, but I do know a lot about lockers. And so I started working with some locker entrepreneurs and really, really realized that I can help these folks a lot. And there's a bigger business around public lockers and something we're doing in that space as well. So I started a venture fund that's a micro fund. It's just focused on locker companies. And so I found that now when I invest in those companies, I can help them in so many ways when it comes to manufacturing, partnerships, operations, compensation. I mean, you name it, I've been there. And so these guys, it's fantastic. It's so much fun to work with them and just level them up really quickly. So as an investor, you know, typically I was just giving my money and betting on the horse. Now I'm giving the money and I'm sitting there with the horse riding side by side with them. And it's been a lot of fun. So yeah, we started the fund back in, you know, officially started in January. We just started really fundraising for it. We've done 3 investments so far and really they're doing great. And it's exciting to be part of.
You said bet on the horse too. And, you know, I have a venture fund. We're basically doing something similar, but focused, you know, on the growth factory. I'm a investor into yours. You invested in the growth factory, but we bet on the jockey more than the horse. I don't know. What's your approach on that? Are you founder focused in where you put your money, or is it more in the model, the business model?
No, I mean, that's a great point. I mean, the jockey at the end of the day is super important. I think that's where a lot of my investing was back in the day. Now I'm still invested in the jockey, but now like that horse that I'm investing in, I own the racetrack, right?
Yeah.
And so, or I'm involved, I'm an investor in the racetrack. Like I know the racetrack. And so, even if that jockey falters a little bit, I feel like I can still help those horses run fast. And that's what's different about this venture fund and other stuff I've done, where in the past, I'm just betting on that jockey going, this guy's going to ride a horse well, and he's going to win the race. Now I'm like, I know the horse, I know the track, I know the jockey. If one of them doesn't work, we can still pivot and change it and help them be successful and know, hey, watch out for that curve in the track because it's got some rocks in it. And if you go to the inside, you're going to win better. So that's what's very different about my fund and something that's been, that I realized, like, hey, betting on the jockey is pretty much just going to a horse track and throwing down money. Whereas now, like, I've got an insider's edge.
Yeah, yeah. Really cool. Really cool story. We always want to make sure we give a chance to give some, like, helpful tips. Do you feel like we've shared the story that we wanted to share generally? I want to make sure that we give some helpful tips to our audience. Like, what are you doing besides EO and the EO Accelerator? Are there how else are you taking in things, information, data, advice that is helping you in your business? Do you read books? Do you listen to podcasts? What else? Any helpful hacks for our audience?
I mean, I don't know about hacks. I definitely, so like I, when I started working with Arik, I was in school. I dropped out. He told me not to, and I didn't listen to him.
You were in college.
I was in college.
What school were you going to?
I was at Sac State.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going for government. Classic. Turns out that doesn't help me too much. But I hated reading, of course, like because you're forced to, and like you have to read these terrible textbooks. And then I start, you know, Luxor started taking off. I was an executive there, and Arik hired world class people, except for me, right? And so there was all these amazing executives I was sitting on a team with, and I was 20, and I completely felt, you know, underwhelming in that situation. So I poured myself into books. I just read business book after business book. You know, books are like anything else. Not all of them are great, but it gives you a lot of different perspectives. And it did a lot for me, and I still do it to this day.
So what are you reading now that you're an entrepreneur? What's maybe give me a good book as an employee that you read, and then maybe a good book that was helpful as an, because I read a lot of books too.
Yeah.
Mostly on, I do the Audible now, but.
Oh yeah, sure.
But because I don't like to read that much.
Yeah,
either.
I don't like to read anything. Yeah.
So yeah, but like what's been helpful as an employee, and then maybe what was helpful, what's been helpful maybe more recently?
Yeah, I mean, right now I'm making the people at my company, we're reading Good to Great, that Jim
Classic.
Classic, right?
Yeah.
But for the stage we're at, it's exactly, you know, it's the right, it's a good book to come back to.
Is there a story within, because Good to Great, you know, it's an interesting book because it's got companies in there that have done well, and there's some of those ones that went from good to great and now they're out of business.
Yeah.
So that's kind of an interesting thing about Good to Great. But there are certain stories in there that sort of tie, you know, to the time of your business. Is there like a certain story that you, or chapter, or let's call it lesson within the book that is meaningful for what you guys are doing?
I mean, you know, like one of the core, I think it's really the core story of what he's trying to tell is like, you need to get the right people on the bus, mm-hmm. whether that's talking about like back with Arik and I or what I'm doing today. Like, I think we all, it all comes, it's all about the people, right? Mm-hmm. And it's something that I think, I think all people in like management kind of fall into is like how the book talks about when you get like the right people on the bus, like you don't necessarily need to motivate. They're kind of bought into the vision and they're self-motivated. They're passionate about what you're doing as well. And like sometimes I fall into that, especially in like my type of thing, like a blue collar guys in the shop, you know, in the powder coat and booth day in, day out. And we think a lot about how do we, you know, motivate and inspire and stuff like that. But also through our hires, we found people that enjoy the vision of what we're doing and the ride that we're going on, and they don't really need the push.
They like, you're able to paint a picture of what you're going to become versus like, we're not just painting racks.
Yeah.
We're building a business where opportunity is going to be created. Is that sort of how you?
100%. Yeah. Because, you know, I got like this 20-year-old guy, Gage, you know, who came in just looking for a job. But now that he's in the company and like experiencing EOS and kind of seeing our vision of, hey, these guys they're not just making like a powder shop for themselves. They're actually trying to make a really cool business. He's like 100% more bought in, right? And if anything, it's a huge competitive advantage for us, right? Because you can go next door to the next, you know, powder coater, blue collar manufacturer, and they're like, I just rivet this thing for 8 hours. Or you can come across the street and like, hey, let's build a business together. Yeah. And that's been really powerful for us.
That's cool. So when you were back when you were an employee, was there a book that was helpful to you that ended up making an impact? That's a while ago.
Yeah, it was a little while ago. I was on the executive team, so it was always something. I was always trying to get better at management.
Mm.
I mean, God, there's so many. Like the Patrick Lencioni books.
Yeah. Like
the Five Dysfunctions mm-hmm. is always a classic. Like that one did a lot for me when I was doing it. And then like talking about entrepreneurship, like The Hard Thing About Hard Things. That's a good one.
I read that one right when COVID started.
Yeah.
And it was like, because I, so I had heard about it. I was like, oh, God. Because it was a hard thing for me when COVID started. How about you, Arik? How do you take in your data these days? You're learning, because you're a continuous learner. You're still a young guy, too.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for me, after selling my company, what I didn't realize is while I'm an entrepreneur, I'm now an investor. And that's like a whole new business. That I didn't even know the first thing about how to invest my money. And so I've been doing a lot of research on that and trying to understand, you know, methods of asset allocation and different asset classes and how to negotiate deals and stuff like that. So one of the best books I read there is called Lifestyle Investor, Justin Donald. He has a mastermind as well that I'm part of now. That's been transformative for how I look at deals and such. Back in the business, you know, the one that I promote a lot now along with the EOS and Traction is 3HAG, 3-year highly achievable goal.
Oh, I haven't remember that one.
Yeah, I mean, just from a business strategy. So EOS is really great. It's kind of a it's like business for dummies, right? And it's like, step one, do this. Step two, do this. Here's how you run a business and scale a business. You're like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
But then there's, but like the meat of some things, especially around the strategy side, I felt like I needed more around that.
So, Rehag. So you put out a 3-year
highly achievable big goal.
Highly what?
Yeah, it's 3-year highly achievable goal.
So highly Rehag achievable. Is a
big,
okay.
Hairy, audacious goal.
Like, right.
I want to change the world. Well, how are you going to do that? In the next 3 years, here's how you're going to do that. So in 3 years, here's exactly what we want to do.
Highly achievable, but aggressive. How aggressive of a goal is a because that makes it's kind of sound.
It's highly achievable, right?
Highly achievable, okay.
So
set it low.
It's not. you want to say, but, I mean, Robbie talked about this a lot as sort of a competitive advantage. And it's always been a competitive advantage of my companies is really building something greater than going to your work that day and answering phone calls or powder coating lockers, yeah, or taking a sales call, right? How are you part of something greater? And so that 3-HAG has been really powerful because it's like, here's where our company is today. Here's where we're going to be in 3 years. And here's, yeah, how we're getting there.
Yeah.
And so I always had that in my mind, but I never did a great job of communicating it and never really had the picture clearly on the wall. So literally now at our office, we have 5 pictures on the wall, which is our mountains we're going to climb. And once we've climbed those, we've achieved our 3-HAG.
Yeah.
And it's been amazing because, like, we are spot on with where we want to go with those. And we are transforming our company into something different. So for me, it's been really powerful. We just implemented it. EO and where we want to be in 3 years. So, right, our goal in 3 years is to have a line out the door of people who want to join EO. And so what do we need to do that? And so we have 4 fundamental mountains that we're going to climb that are going to help us get there.
Just come on the Mark Haney show. We'll broadcast it.
There you go.
You can have a line, guaranteed.
But we got to build a healthy organization, right? Yeah. You know, so like, hey, yeah, we can go out and sell people and hard close them, get an organization. But how do we make sure that they're getting a ton of value out of it? And so that's where you really got to get down into the meat of it. And so that's been a lot of fun for me and kind of the coaching side of things too, to be able to sit down with companies and say, cool, you've got a great product. You know, Robbie, you want to scale this thing nationwide. Where are we going to be in 3 years? How are we going to have 3 or 5 locations? And what do we need to do? And what's the time frame when we need to do those? In order to do those, you've got to have, you know, certain processes in place. You need to prove that you can do a second shop and it can hit certain numbers of revenue, et cetera, et cetera. And so those would be kind of the process that would be the outcome of the 3-HAG process.
Okay, Arik, you get the final word for the mic drop. Let us have it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great one, right? I mean, if you're talking to that person that's in college right now, you know, startups, entrepreneurship, it's amazing. Like being around people like myself, like yourself, anybody in EO, any of those entrepreneurs, if you can figure out how to hook up with those guys and do something, you're going to get thrown into the pit and you're just going to learn so much so quickly, right? So when you're coming out of college, that's your goal. Like learn as much as you can, as fast as you can, read books, absorb it. Like, I do, you know, I tell people to go to college because for me, college taught me how to learn, right? Like high school taught me how to memorize stuff. College taught me how to learn. And so now, like, I was not a learner until kind of after I graduated college, got thrown into the corporate world and figured out, like, I can be smarter than these people. I can figure this out. This guy's at a dead end job. I don't want to be in a dead end job. Let me figure a bunch of different stuff out. One of the things that's amazing about Robbie is he just reaches out to people nonstop. Like he's not afraid to say, hey, Art, can I grab lunch with you? And when he does, he's got 5 things that he wants to talk about and learn about, right? And so, yeah, you can learn from books, but learning from other people and having them share their stories is one of the most powerful tools out there. And we know people and we're just afraid. I mean, me, I was never great at it. I'm like, if I were to look back, I'm like, God, I have a lot of people in my network, but I never leverage them well. And someone like Robbie is leveraging his network over and over and over again. And that is so powerful and just levels him up, opens him up to a lot of different experiences and makes him a lot smarter, better entrepreneur.
Go learn from people who have been there, done that, have got different kinds of experience than you, different blind spots than what we all have. So thank you, Robbie Morin. He is the owner, founder of Lux Powder Coat. And of course, Arik Levy, the founder of Luxor One. And now with this Locker Venture company. I'm sorry, I can't remember.
Locker One Ventures.
Locker One Ventures. Thanks for coming on the show, guys.
Thanks, Mark.
Now, let's get Mark's perspective and closing thoughts from today's show. We're back to the Marquee Media Studio. It's the Mark Haney Show.
Great show today. Appreciate Robert and Arik for sharing their words of wisdom, their insights about commitment and about you know, when you put everything on the line in an early stage company, you never know what opportunity is going to surface. And of course, these two are proof of that. I mentioned at the beginning of the show that I was going to talk about our August 25th event at the grounds in Roseville. It is called GFX, and it's going to be a place where we really try and bring entrepreneurs together with venture capitalists. We're going to have corporate partners there, and really it's around bringing out the backyard advantage of the Sacramento region, getting us connected around the most promising startups in the region. It's going to be a great event. If you have interest in attending, hit me up on social media at The Mark Haney. It'll be on the Growth Factory website soon, but if you want early information, I can get you connected. Again, August 25th, GFX. And just to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. To the 13 stripes and to the 50 stars and to that one American dream always worth fighting for, yours. We're never above you. We're never below you. We're always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.